You're listening to KPFA 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara County, and across the globe at kpfk.org. Pacifica Radio for all the surfing, California and beyond.
Well, good afternoon, listeners. Good afternoon, listeners and friends. This is Jim Lafferty, co-host of the Lawyers Guild Show, along with my co-host and friend Maria Hall. Maria, we have a somewhat unusual show for people today. As always, though, tell our listeners what they're going to be in store for if they stay tuned, and I hope they do.
Yes. Well, first, we have organizer and activist Victor Naro, who will be updating us on the labor movement from this moment onward. Then my co-host Jim Lafferty will be changing hats or changing seats for a half hour. I'll be interviewing him about the status of the Guantanamo Bay military prison. We'll talk about those who are still languishing there and talk about a sobering vision of its future.
Well, yes. All right. And let's get started. Victor is already here with us. It is wonderful to have Victor with us today. Introduce him, why don't you, Maria, and we'll get started.
I will. And I will just take 20 seconds to say thank you to KPFK 90.7 FM. Since 1959, KPFK has held open the public airwaves to amplify voices of truth and freedom like those you are going to hear today. So it is KPFK's fun drive time. If you can, head over to kpfk.org or call 818-985-5735 and give your donation of whatever you can afford. Okay, so let's jump right in. Well, as we've all seen, the cost of rent, gas, groceries, healthcare, and other basic needs of life in the U.S. are becoming more and more out of reach, even for those working a full-time job. According to Jacobin Magazine, even for those Americans who are able to work full-time, 54% of them have a side hustle, at least one other job, to make ends meet. It's simply not sustainable. As a nation, we're suffering severe mental and physical consequences to our health and facing uncertainty over our collective future. Last year, in the summer of 2023, thousands followed Joe Hill's mantra, "Don't mourn, organize." From actors to housekeepers, writers, and UPS drivers, in Los Angeles alone, more than 11,000 workers participated in rolling strikes in an awe-inspiring show of solidarity. Now, typically, you'd think having more engaged workers would be a good sign for the Democratic Party in an election year. After all, the bosses usually want less government oversight and fewer taxes, so they generally vote Republican. But apparently there's been a shift, and a recent Pew study found at least 40% of union members are now voting Republican. During this past election, it showed. So what does this all mean for the future of the labor movement? Well, we're so fortunate to have with us today our dear friend, Victor Naro. Victor has been a community organizer and a labor and immigrant rights activist for decades. Victor has been a Lawyers Guild member since 1996 and served as co-president of the LA chapter in 2009 and 2010. He's the project director at UCLA Labor Center and a lecturer at UCLA Law School, and he's authored several books, including one I'll be asking him about later today called The Activist Spirit Toward a Radical Solidarity, published by Hardball and Little Heroes Press. Thank you so much for being here today, Victor Naro.
Yay! Welcome, Victor.
Thank you so much. And, you know, I never say no to the National Lawyers Guild, especially this great program that you all have. And I only know I got a short period of time, so throw me the questions. Plenty to talk about the labor movement and immigrant rights movement. So ask away your questions.
All right.
Let's
Thank
grill
you.
them. Let's grill them.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the status of labor unions and workers in the US. I was really heartened to read yesterday that Amazon workers at four Southern California facilities authorized a strike after Amazon refused to recognize the Teamsters as their union. Yet, on the other hand, I was shocked in July when the president of the Teamsters spoke at the Republican National Convention. So, what's the story here? Are unions in the US veering to the right, or is there more to the story?
No, I think there's more to the story. What happened with the Teamsters, Sean O'Brien, the president of the International, there's always a, if you look closely what happened after he endorsed Trump, the Teamsters, different regional Teamsters shifted the other way. They went ahead and endorsed Kamala Harris. The labor movement, there's a, the international is, doesn't always translate to what the regional and the statewide and the local offices of the international union represent. And so we saw the majority of Teamsters regions and locals shift into Kamala Harris as a statement that it was not uniform. But there is, economic populism has been the term being used about what happened in the elections, that there's states like Wisconsin and Michigan where a lot of union voters voted for Trump. And I think, my analysis of this is, and this is what Bernie Sanders has been claiming as well, is we have to really, revamp our narrative, our messaging about economic populism and really meet the workers where they hurt the most today, which is, as you mentioned in your introduction, the economy. People are struggling, and we need to do a better job of connecting with that and have an impact on people's lives, meeting workers where they're at. Because I think, to his credit, I hate to give him credit, but to his credit, the Trump campaign did tap into that economic populism message, much in the way Bernie Sanders did in 2016 and in 2020. We need to revive that. We need to make sure we are, I mean, the workers make up this country. The workers are the backbone of this country, and we need to be there for workers. But the Democratic Party needs to show that. We need to be there, regardless of the issues of corporate interests and lobbyists and everything. We need to, plain and simple, say we're there for workers. The workers is our principal reason why we exist as a Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what we need to. We shape the narrative, we shape the message, and moving forward.
Yeah. And we'll get specific though with us a bit here. The LA Times published an article, Victor, Monday, I think it was this week, entitled "Both Employers and Workers Alike Are Wary of What a Second Trump Term Means for Labor." And according to the article, it mentioned many things, but according to the article, one major concern is over the fate of the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB. Remind us, our listeners, what the NLRB is and why it's important, and how might it change under Trump? Here's a guy who's called for firing striking workers, and he cozies up with Musk and all the rest. So how might the NLB and what Trump might do to it affect the rights of workers in the period ahead?
So the National Labor Relations Board is a five-member board that oversees and implements the National Labor Relations Act, which was one of the outcomes of the FDR administration. That's the law, the federal law that governs the right to organize, union organizing, protection for union workers, and other kinds of economic protections, workers' rights protections for unions. And every, the National Labor Relations Board makeup is split between Republicans and Democrats. But usually the presidential administration has the ability to shift it to a majority representing that president's party. And then the general counsel is like the executive director of the NLRB. She sets, this general counsel sets the policy. And the, under Biden, we had Jennifer Abruzzo, who was an excellent general counsel. And he had the majority on the National Labor Relations Board. And that's why we saw a lot of great major decisions by the NLRB about captive audience meetings, that were, restrictions or outlaw, really getting rid of captive audience meeting, non-competitive competition, competitive contracts, Get rid of that. That's a major problem with workers today. And also, how to expand major protections to and also go against employers that interfere with the rights to organize. They came up with a lot of great decisions. Now, under Trump, he's going to replace a new general counsel, probably somebody who's going to be from the right, who's going to represent his ideological viewpoints, who's going to probably benefit employers. And also, he's going to have the ability to appoint new NLRB members so that it will shift to a Republican majority. The issues there is that because the NLRB can undo their decision, so they'll probably undo a lot of the gains that we've had under Joe Biden, which is really why whoever is president makes a huge difference. You think in terms of the National Labor Relations Board and the right to organize in this country, but that doesn't stop unions from organizing. We've organized under Republican administrations in the past. We fight back. The labor movement is very resistant, and they do fight back because workers today, I think, their backs up against the wall. Keep in mind that the labor density in this country, in spite of all the major strikes we've had the past few years, we still have low labor density in this country. It's still not almost 94% of the private sector is now unionized. And so we need to, and those are, if you don't have a union country in this country, you're very vulnerable to the issues that Maria raised earlier. And we have to keep fighting for the rights of workers and keep not only for the right to unionize, but fight for the rights of workers everywhere. Because I think the cost of living and the housing is unaffordable. My poverty study that I've done here at, UCLA Labor Center, indicates like even Los Angeles, you got to earn $34 an hour just to have affordable housing. And the majority of workers in Los Angeles, unless even workers that have a union contract are struggling, but for workers that don't have a union contract, almost not, up to 90% of their income could be on rent. And so we need to continue in the struggle and the fight to create a quality of life for the working class in this country. But also this involves strengthening the labor movement because a strong labor movement benefits workers everywhere.
Right. All right.
Yeah. And in turning to particular issues in Los Angeles, one of the worries that employers have, and that's the bosses have, according to the same Times article that Jim mentioned earlier, is that Trump will follow through on some of the immigration policies like workplace raids and deportations, mass deportations of immigrants. Talk about the connection between labor and immigration. And why these punitive immigration policies are troubling for both workers and employers.
Well, since 1986, when we had the last kind of legalization in this country under Ronald Reagan, things have changed in this country. The demographic, the economic landscape, a lot of the industries that really create a lot, very generate a lot of revenues for our economy. Many of these industries are dominated by immigrant workers. There's been an integration of the immigrant workforce in so many ways that, and in places like California, undocumented workers are a big part of our economy. To give you an example, agricultural workers up to 70% undocumented. If you deported all the agricultural workers in California undocumented, the agricultural industry will collapse, and then the whole country goes with it because that's a huge part of the U.S. industry. But it's similar to other industries. The labor movement. This is why the labor movement really has integrated with immigrant rights, especially in the last 25 years, because we know in the labor movement that in order to fight for a better life for workers in this country, we also have to be there for immigrant workers and fight for immigrant rights, and especially undocumented workers. I think the Trump administration is lacking in sophisticated knowledge and data of the reality. We're very integrated into the workforce, immigrant workers, and immigrants are integrated to all the different sectors of our economy. And if you were to carry out this deportation, you will cause severe economic crisis in this country. And there's a reason why many business groups, normally they're not pro-worker, right? But they understand this issue. They understand that their financial stability, financial security depends on immigrant workers, and especially undocumented workers. And so, in California, in Los Angeles, we just passed a strong sanctuary law. The immigrant rights group, labor groups came together, and we fought hard. It was a 7-year campaign. We started this in 2017. It was a 7-year campaign. We finally got the sanctuary ordinance that one of the strongest ones in the country, and now other cities in LA County are duplicating it. But it will make it very difficult. We cannot stop federal law enforcement from coming to LA because it's a federal jurisdiction. They can come here, but we're not going to cooperate in any way. No data sharing. No, provide not even providing like backup for any operations that they have. If they want to do large workplace raids or something, we're not even allowed to. Even the LAPD would not cannot even provide backup and or any departments. And we're going to try to make it as resistant as possible, so that when they come here, they're going to realize it's going to be hard for them to carry out their operations. But then on their own, with the immigrant rights movement, labor movement coming together, we got the sanctuary policy, but sanctuary policy doesn't go all the way with protection. We also need to do our piece. We need to come together and create strong committees in different neighborhoods, rapid response teams. We need to make it so that when they show up, they will not feel welcomed at all. They will not feel, we want to create a hostile space, in other words, for ICE agents. And I think that's the way to focus, and unfortunately, what happens in California is, we do have, it's a blue state. It's a, super majority Democrats in the legislature. So we got the ability to come up with good safeguards, good protections. But now we got to figure out what to do in the states like Alabama, Georgia, or some of those red states, because I do worry about immigrant families in those states and undocumented workers. And I think the Trump administration is probably going to go deep in those states. So we're trying to figure out together how we can support immigrant communities in those parts of the United States where they're very vulnerable. But I think we're much better prepared in 2016. 2016, we were caught by surprise. I was 100% sure Hillary was going to win in 2016. So we were all caught by surprise. But now we've been planning for the last 6 months. We didn't wait until after the election outcome. We were planning to make sure that we can put things in place quickly. And I'm really impressed by how we have come. I mean, you talk about solidarity. Solidarity is deep now between all of the movements, especially the immigrant rights movement and labor movement.
And yes, and you and I have talked about that in the past. And there is, I think you might agree, more solidarity now than there has been in some times in the past between those movements, as they understand not one of them is powerful enough on its own, that they have more in common than they have apart, that they don't need to be jealous of one another's successes or supporters, and that when they work together, they all benefit. I don't think that I think we can't move on without me just saying parenthetically, sadly, that Obama, of course, deported, got rid of more people than Trump did during his term. But I want to focus a bit on what people can do. And I can't remember which president it was now, but this radio station, for example, Victor, and I think you may have been the one who suggested this, I can't remember, but we would learn about a raid that was going on somewhere at a workplace, and or that was scheduled. Somehow we found out some that were scheduled. And so we announced on the air that that was happening and urged people to go to it and show their support. Now, we weren't urging people to go there and throw themselves in front of the immigration officer and getting arrested. That's something they could do if they wanted to. We just said, go and show your support for those immigrants. Is that the kind of thing, again, Victor, that you're hoping people might do? And the radio
Yeah, and that, I think,
perhaps help?
yeah, that's the example of the rapid response
Yeah.
task force and rapid response that we are putting into place. The Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights, CHILA, and other groups have working. I mean, everybody has a role to play, right? There'll be legal support. We do have Rep LA, the program now with legal service providers like CHILA, Immigrant Defenders, CARES, and others do get resources from the city and the county to do representation for immigrants that are caught up in deportation proceedings. So I think that's quite, they're creating the legal infrastructure. But then the idea is the preventive measures, like what we can do to make sure no immigrant family has a family member that's caught up in that process. And that's why rapid response, being there for community, you know, this is where like community members got to be there for community members. The media has a role to play, like get media folks there. You know, immigration officials don't like to be filmed when they engage in operations. So they usually try to, so everybody has a role to play, organizers. And then they ask, you know, this is the call for nonviolence, right? And
yes.
Civil disobedience. You know, I got arrested with a lot of my NOG cohorts back in 2014 when we blocked the federal detention facility in downtown LA. Awesome Jorge Gonzalez got our case dismissed. He represented us, the late Jorge Gonzalez. And, you know, so there's going to be the call for that as well. You know, those that have privilege and are able to do it, the part of rapid response to is engaged in civil disobedience.
Wonderful.
But the idea is also to create as the way they intimidate and cause fear in us, and the way they bully us, we turn that against them. You know?
Well,
because I think that's how they function. They, you know, Trump functions on the fear, intimidation, bullying. But you know, we want to make it really so that when federal agents come into Los Angeles, that nobody's going to cooperate, nobody's going to welcome them, nobody's going to open the door for them. So we do a lot of community outreach. You got to have a judicial warrant. None of this crappy administrative warrants that came out of the Patriot Act. You gotta have an official judicial, and you gotta slip it underneath the door. You can't just open the door. So we're gonna make it as intimidating as possible. It's challenging as possible for them to come to Los Angeles. But you know, Los Angeles, which is one city of many cities and states, so I hope as the word gets out there, so you know, the communities need to come together and take it through their own hands, and really be part of the fight back.
Yeah.
It doesn't just all fall on lawyers.
No.
It doesn't just fall on organizers. We all have a role to play. The labor movement now is trying to figure out strategies on how to protect not just workers in the workplace, but employers that, you know, if you get an ICE audit or you get notification by ICE, what the employer should do right away. You know, we're doing, you know, workshops to also educate employers. And
well,
you know, the idea is like it's bullying, intimidation, and fear, and that's how they function. And we can overcome those three, turn it against them. I think we'll be successful.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, just that simple educational thing. One of the things that struck me the last time around, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, Victor, you know more about this, but if I'm an immigrant that's here and I'm undocumented, and I'm walking down the street and somebody comes up to me and identifies himself as a ICE agent and starts to ask me questions, I'm under no obligation to answer any of his questions, am I?
You don't have to answer any question.
No.
If you're in a public space, you can just keep on walking.
That's right.
The ICE agent is not going to have the ability to have LAPD support.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? And then also areas like, you know, the Trump administration has threatened to lift up the longstanding policies of having ICE activity near the schools and clinics. So we need to be prepared for that. So we need to work with a lot of allies. The LA Unified School District, the LA School Board is also working on how to deal with that issue. So if they show up near the school parameters.
Wonderful.
I think the Church Clue, that organized a lot of the local interfaith leaders. We're looking at churches in the 19, you know, you remember, Jim, in the 1980s. You know, I know Maria was probably not born yet. But in the 1980s, you remember, Jim, like how sanctuary was with the churches.
With the church
movement. So we want the sanctuary. I'm Catholic. I'm calling on the Archdiocese to get into the strategy, too.
Damn straight.
A lot of the Catholic churches can do, but there's all other churches that become havens for.
But Victor, I'm interrupting you only because we're going to run out of time, and I want to make sure we talk a bit about your book, The Activist Spirit, Towards a Radical Solidarity. Talk to us about this book, and so because our listeners should be interested. Perhaps.
Yeah, so I wrote the book during the crisis of the pandemic, because the pandemic hit us in so many different ways, and we were losing not just family members, but good people in the activist community and workers' rights, worker leaders, community leaders. And I think, what came out of the pandemic and we're seeing it today is the radical solidarity. I think solidarity was always strong, but we should talk about being radical about the solidarity, which means like interconnectedness, like be there for each other. We can agree, the social justice work, as we always fight, we always have disagreements, but that's because we're all different and everything. We come different viewpoints and everything, but we should never let go of that core, that radical solidarity, that interconnectedness, because I think that's what's going to get us. That's uplift each other, be there for each other. That's what's going to get us for the next 4 years. I think that's the best way to overcome the fear, the intimidation. Is if we're strong in our radical solidarity and we're strongly interconnected, they can throw whatever they want at us. We'll be able to overcome it.
Yeah, we'd be many and they'd be few
Yeah.
is a great quote from, whose name escapes me at the moment. They're wonderful.
So the book taps into the teachings of the Dalai Lama, Martin Luther King,
Yes.
Reverend Lawson, all the different spiritualists. But I put together a fabric where, it comes to the essence of being in radical solidarity with one
How
another.
do people, where would they find it? Bookstore, online? What's the best way?
You can order Amazon, but I'm trying to say, order from the publisher. Hardball Press is www.hardballpress.org.
Hardball Press.
It's a small union publisher in New York, and
No,
you
no.
order it from them, they get more of the resources than if you order it from Amazon. But you can order it from Amazon, but it's better if you order it from the publisher.
Hardball Press. Yeah. No, absolutely. And these little presses, listen, the big publishers don't want anything to do with it. It's like the little movie makers. Nobody wants the little movies. They want a $200 million
Yeah, and
movie.
they publish the books that
Are you
the big
serious? Yeah.
publishers don't want to publish.
That's right. That's right. Well, we do need to leave a couple of minutes to do some business. Victor Naro, I mean, it's really a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I
Hey.
want to make a pitch for KPFK. I listen to them in the evenings because all the Spanish language stations, it's awesome. But I do
Yeah.
listen to them in the evenings, but also during the day. But Trump is going after everything in
Yeah.
sight, and KPFK, the only reason why we can survive is because we're not financed by other reasons. We rely our listeners are we, sustain us, and that's something he can never break. But we're gonna have to be there for even KP. We're gonna have to be in radical solidarity with KPFK.
Yes. And would you agree with me, Victor, as one of the leaders in the movement in this town for many years? I often say, and I don't think it's hyperbole, you tell me if you think I'm wrong, that when people contribute, when people donate now during our fund drive to KPFK, they are not only making sure we stay on the air, but they're making sure the voice of the movement stays on the air because the corporate media is not always asking you to come on. They're
Oh
not
yeah,
all.
I would never be able to talk about what I talked about right now in NPR. No, so
Right. So,
yeah.
right, even the other. So, I say to people, call us now at 818-985-5735 and make a donation, however large or small as you can, as small or large as you can, so I guess I should say, but you get my drift. Now, some of you have got good jobs, other people out of work. You're out of work, you're listening. Don't feel bad, my friend. We're sorry. You just keep listening, you keep joining in the various causes. You keep fighting, we fight right with you. But if you happen to have a good job, well, remember that everybody doesn't, and make a bigger contribution than usual. And understand that when you do, you're making sure that groups like the group that Victor is working with, and all the immigrant rights groups that Victor Naro has worked with for years, are going to be able to get their message out. They're going to be able to have that kind of solidarity, and it's the only way you can beat back the Trumps of this world. So please do that. Maria, you always say go to the website, right? That's an easy way to do it too. But when you do it, make sure you
Okay.
let people know you're contributing because of the Lawyers Guild Show. We like to get a pat on the back too. All right,
Yeah.
we'll let Victor go, I guess.
No, thank you. I might stick around for your segment. I want to hear about
Oh,
your
that'd be
side. Thank
great.
you so much. Thank you,
Never.
everyone.
Please be around. Well, we'll have to take station ID, but we've got a couple of minutes, I think, if I'm reading the clock right. So let's continue. Have you had a chance, Maria? I know you often do, to look at what some of the ways we're saying thank you when people give contributions during our pledge drives?
Yes. Well, there was one in particular, one of the premiums offered, which is a Gabor Mate book on how capitalism is making us sick.
Ah.
And that one was sort of along the lines of this theme. It's a book about the fact that from our work schedules, we're just not living life. like people in other countries can't. You know, we are just not living life. We're living to work only, and we're missing out on the connection with friends, on just being human and feeling, you know, appreciating our lives. So it's all about that. And it also coincides with all of this anxiety and all of the pharmaceutical, the drugs that all the companies want us to take, and on. So I thought that was a really nice one. That's for a thank you gift for a $120 donation.
I'm always impressed that I generally get, and I'll do it again this time, that generally it's for $100. Sometimes it's a little more, sometimes less. There are all these wonderful collections of whether it's Nina Simone. I got one time recently. I got, I can't remember, a number of Ella Fitzgerald. I got one time. They're great. And actually, when you think about all, sometimes they have 2 hours of music on them, you know, and you've paid $80 or $100. You'll find those online when you look under the various amounts you want to contribute. In terms of how we say thank you in that level. So do that, my friends. As I say, we like to think that just having the Lawyers Guild show and all the other wonderful programs on KPFK, including our music programs, my God, we play music that nobody else plays. Mm-hmm. But we like to think that that alone is enough for you to want to contribute. That's why you listen. So fair is fair. We don't spend a big deal of time. Now, you noticed in that first half hour, with Victor and I, we spent, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, maybe 5 minutes, I don't know. Not much, because we want to bring you the substance and not simply pitch for money. But that means that we've been making less money. Because they've shown that it's not surprising, if you pitch for 20 minutes, you make more money than if you pitch for 5 minutes. Well, but the politics are so important today. We live in a very special time in this world. It's unlike any other time in my life, I can assure you. So we're prepared to do that. We're prepared to bite the bullet and cut all the costs we can in order to bring you more programming per hour, and not in the old fashioned that some of the other stations still do. That's a two-way street, my friends. Honor that commitment on our part by making the commitment on your part. You'll feel good when you do. You know, I never feel bad when I do something. I contribute to a group. I feel great. So you'll do it. We'll feel great. We'll keep on the air. You'll keep listening. The movement will keep having a voice. We'll keep fighting back. And it'll be a better city and a better country. So 818-985-5735 or go to kpfk.org. Either way, go ahead. And when you make your contribution, or if you make the phone call, say, hey, I'm calling on behalf of the Lawyers Guild show. They said I should do this, and I think I should. And we'll all be better off for it. Thank you so much, my friends. We now will take that very brief and short station ID, and then we'll be back with me. Yikes.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Supporters include Golden Voice, presenting Alison Krauss and Union Station, featuring Jerry Douglas, Sunday, July 13th at the Greek Theater. Tickets on sale now and available at AXS.com.
The Mississippi Delta was shining like a national guitar.
We are back. I apologize if we're not as hungry.
Get up, stand up.
There's our music again,
stand
you see.
Up for your right.
And by the way, I don't know if we have our theme song as one of the ways we say thank you, but maybe we do. I wouldn't be surprised. It's probably in our archive somewhere anyway. Well, you're listening to the Lawyers Guild still. I'm still Jim Lafferty, along with Maria Hall, who is still Maria Hall. And Victor Naro, bless him, has stayed with us as well, if nothing else, to listen, because he's concerned about broader movements as well, as he talked about. We're going to do something kind of strange and unusual now, which always makes me a little uncomfortable when it happens, but what the heck. Let me just say that a guest we thought was going to be able to do this today at the last minute couldn't, so that's why. Maria, take it away.
All right. Well, we're lucky that Jim is an expert on this topic. So once a front page story, the U.S. prison in Guantanamo Bay is seldom in the news these days. Even as yesterday, I did a Google search and I wasn't able to find news stories that were new. But it certainly should be in the news because its history and ongoing operations of Gitmo, as it's sometimes called, exposes the lie behind our claim to be a nation governed by the rule of law. Condemned by Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and many other groups, Guantanamo Bay Prison is a permanent stain on the character of our nation. Today, about 30 suspects remain languishing in Gitmo. 16 of them have already been cleared for release, but nobody can reasonably predict when, if ever, they will be freed, since U.S. courts have ruled they have no right to any due process. And Trump's plans for Guantanamo are truly frightening. Our guest for this topic today is none other than my co-host, Jim Lafferty. I'll skip the usual, more formal introductions we afford to our guests to simply say that Jim is fully informed on this topic and has spoken at virtually all of the annual LA protests of Guantanamo, called by the group Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace, and he's written several articles on the topic. And I do not need to welcome Jim here because he's already here. He's been here for 30 years.
Yeah, I feel very welcome here. Thank you, Maria. Thank you. Well, sure. It's a little embarrassing, but thank you. No. But I'm proud to talk about this topic because it used to be in the press a great deal, of course. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned that. If you go back to 20-some years that it was created, a lot of us remember those hideous pictures of people in hoods and being tortured or made to stand on one foot or being beaten. And it caused quite a scandal. And it was all over the front pages of American newspapers when it bleeds, it leads kind of a theory. But now you don't hear about it. Now, as Maria said, she just went to try to find it online and couldn't. Well, let me remind you of some of the basic facts of it. It initially ended up holding about 779 people. They were supposedly terrorist suspects, people in the war on terror that the military captured in various countries. In fact, those 779 were from 50 different nations, almost all in the Middle East, of course. And I dare say it would be hard for any of us, myself included, to name 50 different Middle East nations. But America's long reach under the so-called umbrella of fighting terrorism. You know, terrorism is always what the other guy does. Terrorism is when somebody who's fighting to be free only has a knife and a hand grenade, and so he blows up something we call him a terrorist, and he's fighting against a big government like the U.S. that can fly B-52 bombers and drop bombs. And there was a great quote in the Battle of Algiers movie years ago when the actual commander of the units that was using quote-unquote terrorist tactics to blow up civilian areas in Algeria was asked why he wasn't ashamed of it. He said he'd make a deal with the French, who were the people who were still controlling his country. If the French will give us their airplanes with all those bombs, I'll happily give them our baskets with our bombs in it, and we'll see who wins. So it's the definition itself is very vague. Not only that, but legally, internationally, if you capture somebody and calling them a terrorist or whatever, in the course of a war, they are a prisoner of war. And as a prisoner of war, they are entitled to certain rights, if you will. We expect our prisoners, our soldiers, when they're captured, to be afforded those rights. We sure as hell didn't do it, though, at Guantanamo. And that's why we saw all those kind of pictures that we saw. And we'll talk more about that in the show. Now, we're down to about 30 now. And that's a result of dozens of trials in federal courts, where a lot of the attorneys for these people said they should be tried anywhere where you could get a bit better trial. Others in military tribunals, which were sort of to military courts, what Alice in Wonderland is to a commentary on decent justice. So it really was pretty shabby and continues to be pretty shabby when those military tribunals are held. And we'll talk more about that as time goes on, too. Now they're down to these 30. 11 of them have already been tried, but they can't find some place where they can send them and so forth and so on. And so it simply continues along. Well, let me stop there, Maria, what you want to talk about. You know, that's sort of the background and that's sort of where we're at now. Where would you like us to go next, Maria?
Sure. Well, I would like to know a little more about the background. And
Oh, for sure.
you mentioned about 800 people or so have been held there during the past 20, since 2001, 23 years.
2001, yep, 23, 22, 20.
So what did they do to justify holding them there over the course of these couple of decades?
Good questions. Some of them, although still prisoners of war and ought not to have been treated as they were at Guantanamo, were actually engaged and did do things, or were accused, we should say, of things that you would that were are done in the course of a war. But an awful lot of them were simply driving a car that somebody may be in who the day before had done something. Or they were selling their goods on the street, from their wagon, and handed out some free food to somebody who was supposedly engaged in acts of warfare, i.e., terrorism, quote unquote, against the United States. In other words, they were caught up in, if you will, the gathering up of people in the course of some victory by the United States in some Mideastern country. They hadn't done war crimes as those crimes are. And by and large, as those crimes are defined under law, some of them, a good many of them, a good many of them were children. I forget the exact number, but a couple dozen or so were children. The youngest one was 13. Now, the idea that some 13-year-old kid who, I don't know, maybe threw a rock at an American soldier is somehow a war criminal and needs to be held as and tried for acts of terrorism is pretty ludicrous. But that's the level at which the US government was propagandizing its reasons for being in the Middle East in the first place and for treating the people that it gathered up not as prisoners of war, as I say, which would have given them many rights, but as terrorists entitled to almost no rights, which, as we'll see, is what happened.
Well, Jim, you and many others, including lawyers who represented prisoners held in Guantanamo, claim that there's virtually no due process in the hearings or in the trials. Can you talk to us about that, please?
Not the Supreme Court. It's not reached, never reached Supreme Court, but the Fifth Circuit from D.C. and appellate court basically said there's no due process for these prisoners of war. They didn't call them prisoners of war either for these terrorist suspects. And so what you have is, if you're a lawyer, for example, representing one of them, you get on an airplane, perhaps you fly it to D.C., and they put you in a locked room. And you're not allowed to have pencil and paper, and they'll show you what some of their evidence is going to be, but you can't make copies of it. You can't really even make notes from it. In some cases, yes, some cases, no. You don't necessarily get a list of all the witnesses that's going to be there. You don't necessarily, therefore, know all of the evidence that's going to be introduced against your client, and then you find yourself in this court. Now, in addition to that, you may have a client who is, quote unquote, supposedly confessed. But under what circumstances did he confess? Did he simply, the moment he was captured, say, "Yeah, I'm a bad guy. I confessed. I committed all these acts of terrorism. Do with me what you will." No, of course not. But if you keep somebody for years away from their family in terrible conditions at Abu Ghraib or in any of these kind of black hole, if you will, prisons where people were kept, not with adequate food. Not even with the adequate opportunity initially, certainly, to even pray to their God, under horrific conditions and torturing them and humiliating them in all of the various ways that the newspapers reported on when this was originally happening. But waterboarding, you had supposedly respectable college professors in this country indicating that waterboarding was perfectly fine and that it wasn't really torture. My God, everybody knows better than that. You just had to think about it for 30 seconds to know that it was torture. So, as a lawyer representing these people, look what you were up against, especially in these military tribunals. But even in the federal courts, the backdrop of where they were kept and how they were kept and what happened to them while they were in prison before you could possibly bring them to trial, to say nothing of the prejudice of the American people, if you were bringing them in front of a trial, if you hoped to have any jury trial, certainly. You had an uphill battle that was, nevertheless, many of those cases were won because of the heroic opportunity of Lawyers Guild members and attorneys from the ACLU, the Lawyers Guild, you name it. Lawyers, including some military lawyers who bucked the military at cost to themselves and their perhaps chances to, you know, be promoted within the military, to do the right thing and fight back against the unjust system.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did have a filmmaker, Felipe Diaz, who has a beautiful movie called I Am Gitmo that we encouraged you in the past to check out. Jim, you've claimed that the U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere have not only been wars for oil, but are also more or less wars against Islam, against the Muslim world. Why do you make that claim?
Yeah. Well, let me just step back even more than and that. It's the claim about oil is also important. I mean, the United States has never said we went into Iraq for the oil. We went into Afghanistan for the oil, did they? No. We went in there to save democracy, or in the case of Afghanistan, to save women who were being treated so badly there, et cetera, et cetera. We didn't admit why we were going in the first place. The rest of the world knew why we were going in. Those countries knew why we were going in. Anybody in the United States who bothered to follow the facts and really dig into it knew why we were going there. We were going there for the oil. Now, you know, there's oil in Russia. There's oil lots of places that we haven't gone into. We did go into all Muslim countries. You know, I've often thought about the fact that during the Second World War, and that was a real war, right? During the Second World War, our enemy was Germany. Now, we had many Germans living in this country. My parents, actually, despite my last name, it's a long story, were German immigrants. They could have been considered the enemies, right? No, we did nothing to them. We did take the Japanese, who don't happen to be white, and we put them, as we know, in concentration camps when we were at war with Japan. But we'd been at war with Germany for years before we did. So the racism of it is also involved. The willingness to do something with people who aren't of our religion, like the Germans were, the Christian religion, Muslims, who aren't of our skin color, that racism and that bigotry with respect to the religious difference, these aren't really fully human people. They eat strange food. They mumble strange prayers. So it doesn't matter. We can go get the oil. And we're not really, and George Bush and others have said, we're not waging war on the Iranians or on the Afghanis. But try to sell that to some American Muslim who got picked up. Or who weren't allowed in the country as visitors to see their family. The children that are harassed and called terrorists on the way to school because they happen to be Muslim kids, or a little girl wearing the coverings. I mean, it was clear that there was a hatred of the Middle East, which the United States government was happy to perpetuate and say little about diminishing in order to justify what they were doing there when their claim that they were there for democracy wasn't enough to hide the fact that they were there for oil and didn't give a damn about these people of this other religion and other skin color.
Hmm. Well, Jim, President Obama claimed he wanted to close down Guantanamo, but it remains open to this day with about the 30 prisoners that you mentioned earlier. So what, if anything, I almost hate to ask this question, what do we know about President-elect Trump's plans for Guantanamo?
Well, you know, Trump has often says three different things. He's been fairly consistent when it comes to Guantanamo. He said in 2016, I can't remember the exact date, but it was 2016, he said that he would actually be interested in using Guantanamo to try American citizens who were accused of engaging in crimes here in the United States. Can you imagine that? Yeah. He also made a point in 2018 to sign an executive order to undo any notion of Obama's that this was going to be closed down. He signed an executive order, did Bush in 2018, to make sure that Guantanamo was going to be kept open. And of course, it is still open. So as he's looking for more and more places to hire, stack away the immigrants he intends on gathering up under his anti-immigration program, I think we expect to see Guantanamo continue. I think those 30 people that are there ought not to be terribly optimistic about the federal government doing much of anything under Trump to get them out of there, as Obama and others claimed they had wanted to get them out of there, although they did precious little about it, too. There's been some effort, I should say, to try to find countries that will take some of these folks, but it's a little difficult after you've had somebody locked away for years and tortured them and turn them into what kind of mental state, it's hard to know. So I think the as with so many other things in our society, the idea of having a more just system to deal with people who are charged of crimes, particularly any crimes against the United States, under Trump looks pretty grim. And he's made it clear that Guantanamo is going to be a part of those facilities.
Well, there are people out there who are still marching and demanding that Guantanamo be closed. So please do tell us about this year's, the latest annual protest. Where, when, how can people know more?
Yeah, well, the Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace, a wonderful ecumenical group of religious folks, people wearing the cloth or the collar, but also just folks who are religious and want to be a part of this wonderful coalition. It was formed at the time of these, or starting of these Mideast wars in order to help bring about some peace. And for, I've lost track of how many years now, but it's certainly been at least a dozen. And if I say a dozen, that means it's probably been more than a dozen. It's always the way things work like that. They have gathered generally in front of the downtown federal building in protest on in January, and they do it on January the 11th. They'll be doing it again this year on January 11th, but they've moved it to, because of some construction issues. They've moved it to the West Side Federal Building, which is often a site of protest anyway. So that's at the corner of Veteran and the southwest corner of Veteran and Wilshire. And on Saturday, the 11th of January, starting at 12 noon, they'll be there. I'll be there. They will have, I think one of the ex-prisoners will be there. One of the lawyers who has represented prisoners will be there. Spokespeople from other progressive groups in town who have taken up this cause in varying degrees will be there. I'm hoping a lot of KPFK listeners will be there. But it's certainly the case that, and there are many people who be there who volunteer every year to come, and they have some street theater that discusses and keeps an eye on the plight of the people who are still there. So it's by going there, you're making a statement, my friends, that this is injustice. This is what the United States ought not to be doing. That it's a war crime to be doing what we're doing and have done there. That these people were entitled, if we really thought they were participants in any kind of military action against us, to be given the rights of that all military prisoners of war are entitled to have, and that that's not what we want to see our country doing. It's time to close Guantanamo Bay. So that's on the 11th of January at 12 noon at the West Side Federal Building. Yeah, my hat is off, as always, to ICUJP for doing this. They're a wonderful group. And when a lot of people, when it got off the front pages, as I say it is now, they've been there, nevertheless, every year, keeping that. And the crowds sometimes get bigger and bigger. So this would be a good time, knowing that Trump's about to take office and do a lot more Guantanamo kinds of things. This would be a good time, folks, who are opposed to that, to show up on the 11th of January at 12 noon at the West Side Federal Building.
Well, thanks, Jim. As we wrap up, I know we want to leave a couple minutes for our KPFK business, but do you have any last thoughts on this?
My only last thought is that Guantanamo, when further histories of the United States are written, Guantanamo will be one of the truly shameful chapters in American history. Oh, there's been a lot of them. I won't deny that, you know. How do you compare Guantanamo with slavery, for God's sakes? I mean, you know. But the fact of the matter is, and especially considering it happened not in the 16th century or the 17th century or the 18th or 19th, but, you know, when it happened, the idea of Guantanamo, the fact that it was done, and that contractors, and we're going to talk about it on our national show, and Maria and I co-host Law and Disorder, which is a national show, and tomorrow I'll be interviewing lawyers for the Center for Constitutional Rights, who brought a big suit against one of the facilitators of torture at Abu Ghraib. But we do have to move on now. So my last thought is simply, what a shame it is, how terrible it is, that it's not fully appreciated as being as damning and damnable as it is. But what's also damnable to me is people who can well afford it, who they do have good jobs. They're driving along. They're listening to our station. They do every day. I'll run into them at a demonstration or somewhere, and they tell me how much they love the station. Well, friends, I'm glad you love the station. I love the station. All the programmers here, with one or two exceptions, are doing this for free. Maria and I, we're not getting paid for this. Our workers are getting half what they should get because they love the station. They're helping keep it alive. You're the ones ultimately who keep it alive. We don't get money from the federal government. If we take any corporate sponsorship, quote unquote, it's not from Archer Daniels Midland, it's from the Red Cross or something. You know, we don't do what a lot of other public stations do. So it's only you. It's only you that stand between our station continuing to be on the air and, as I say, a voice for the progressive cause in Los Angeles, or going off the air. 818-985-5735. Maria, talk again about the website a bit and why that's a good way to decide what to do.
Sure, sure. Yeah, kpfk.org. It's very easy, safe, secure way to give your donation. You can check out all the fun thank you gifts on there. I did a lot of holiday shopping on as pledge premiums personally, because I have my family is there are a lot of musicians, and there are really, really good musical premiums on there.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, Maria's a good musician, but sometimes we should have you sing on the show. And we'll get your favorite guitarist to come and accompany you. And that'll be a great show. And maybe we'll raise more money that way.
But, yeah, the old wobbly songs are really.
Well, wobbly songs.
Speaking of labor, yeah, we can have Victor Naro back and we'll do some wobbly songs.
Yeah. Well, but yes, it's true. And the idea of giving it as gifts is a wonderful idea, because then you've given to the station, you've given to the progressive movement in LA, who uses the station to get its messages out when the corporate media won't do that for them. And you've given a gift to your nephew or niece or whoever it is. It can be a book. It can be one of the great. We have all sorts of DVDs, our documentary DVDs in keeping with the theme of Pacifica and KPFK radio, and music and bags to take to the grocery store to put your groceries in. And cups. Maria must have, 50 cups by now? all the different KPFK cups, some of them designed by street artists and, you know, what have you, like Banksy and what have you. So there's so many ways we do say thank you, in addition to being the kind of station that you must like or you wouldn't be listening now. So you say thank you very much and give us a call at 818-985-5735. Make a pledge, right, Maria? I know you're going to do it. You always do.
Yeah, I already did last week.
You know what? Oh, what'd you get? What did you ask for as a thank you gift?
I can't say because, again, it was a gift.
Oh, it's a gift. You can't say. Somebody might be listening and then they know the gift. Well, there you are, my friends. I think we're probably just about out of time. It's difficult under these circumstances, though, but when we hear our music playing, I will quickly wrap up the show. But in the meanwhile, you've got time. Listen, we hope you'll mention the Lawyers Guild when you contribute. But when we're off the air in a few minutes at other shows, just contribute. That's the main thing. If you think to mention you're doing it because of what you heard of the Lawyers Guild show, of course, we like that. It's a little feather in our cap. But whatever it is, we're not, every show is great. Give to it in the name of whatever show you want, or no show, just give it. You can give anonymously if you want. You can refuse any thank you gifts if you want. Many people do that, and that, of course, helps out in its own way, too. But whatever it is, give us a call and do something. 818-985-5735. You'll feel better if you do, I promise you.
Yeah. A lot of people feel like throwing in the towel right now, but, take a nap. You may be burned out. A lot of activists are burned out right now, but you know what? You're going to bounce right back up.
You're going to let that vicious guy and that cadre of clowns around, those vicious clowns around, you're going to let them make you say no anymore, make you go to sleep, make you stay off the streets, make you give up the battle. Shame on you if you're going to do that.
Okay. You can have a nap. You can have a nap.
Take a nap until the 20th if you want. But by God, you can't do that to yourself. You can't do that to your friends. Think of the young people in this country who are counting on those of us who aren't young anymore to keep the battle going, to give some direction, to give some inspiration. And they are my inspiration, the young people who often put themselves out there in the way that gets them arrested because of peaceful civil disobedience and so forth. Those are the groups we love supporting here at KPFK. They're the groups that I guarantee you will be back on. Even though the college campuses have gotten very severe with respect to what happens if somebody demonstrates on there, dares to demonstrate against the war in Gaza that the U.S. is supporting Israel on, the young people are still doing that. They may not be getting as much coverage as they did, but they're still doing it. There's so much coverage now just put on the election and the new cabinet and the new agencies he's creating out of whole, you know, half cloth. The man is a danger. He is a neo-fascist. what it bespeaks of America is terrible. The people voted for him don't have a clue in the final analysis what it's going to mean. Victor talked about how so much of some of the labor unions have in fact voted for. He talks a good game. He lies. He lied the first time. Now I look at my watch and I see we just have a minute or so left. So I just say, thank you so much. No, hi. We're over. It's over.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Have you ever heard the saying, the only person's behavior I can control is my own? Well, here's your chance to exercise the power of one. Make the decision to support KPFK right now and call with your contribution. Your individual decision helps support the program.